transmitting sound. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
Hello and welcome to the show, as this week we take a look back at some of our most exciting interviews and segments from the past year. We've had so many great guests that we wanted you to have another chance to hear what they had to say. Sometimes it's incredible to think that these awesome and talented people have joined us on the show, and we are so happy for you to have another chance to hear what's going on. So settle in and get ready for an exciting ride, because it's been quite the year right here on the Kelly Alexander Show.
Your need for sound.
If you're a fan of the world of dance, you have definitely seen this lady's moves in action. She's worked with Celine Dion on her Vegas show A New Day. She's created stunning choreography for Cirque du Soleil's Delirium. She's also helped Madonna, Ricky Martin, and Prince have all the right moves when they're on stage performing. And oh yeah, did I mention she's been a judge and choreographer on multiple versions of So You Think You Can Dance, including the US, Canada, and Australian editions? Emmy Award winner Mia Michaels, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I guess the first question I wanted to ask you, Mia, was have you always known since a child that dance would play such a huge part in your life and career?
Actually, I didn't really know anything other than dance, because I was born into a dance family, so I just knew it from, like, music and dance was just part of my life from the day I was born. So I guess I, you know, it was just destined. So I never really thought about anything else, really.
I guess the next question would be, what was your first major break in the world of dance to get your name out there?
I think that for me, a really pivotal time in my career was when I was in New York. I was living there, and I started my company, Raw, and I was very much, we were in the studio for like hours and hours, from like 11 o'clock at night all the way to like 5 in the morning, like every day, because that's when we could get free studio space. And that time really allowed me to find out who I was as an artist, as a choreographer, because I was spending so much time in the wee hours of the morning. And I think that was my breaking point in finding out who I was, what my voice was as an artist. And then after that, I got Madonna, but I can't really say that that was anything. That wasn't really anything special to me, to tell you the truth. I think the biggest project that kind of really put me on the map, I think, was Celine Dion, The New Day in Vegas. And then from that point on, it just kind of, you know, went on to So You Think and just all kinds of stuff. So.
And maybe this is a bit of a strange question, but when we watch you on the show, it almost just feels like you are inspired by I don't know what. Like, it just seems like things come to you, and I know you obviously put in a ton of work in your career, but it just seems like you're almost like a conduit for movement. Do you feel that?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I just kind of, I'm very instinctual, and when I see things, I see them, and I either love them or I hate them, or if it feels unique to me, it inspires me. When I'm watching movement and dance, it's just I just go to another place. I really do. I just kind of, I don't know. It's hard to explain, you know? Very instinctual when I create. I don't really think a lot when I'm creating. I just feel my way through it. From the phrasing to how I hear music to what feels right and wrong, and I just go based on that.
And with regards to you judging on So You Think, when we watch you, I almost feel like when the dancers are on stage, I wish there was a split screen and we actually had a camera on you, because I just feel like either you're like a proud mom, or like you just want to be like, hey, you need to fix that.
Or I'm traumatized, right? Yeah, my face doesn't hide a whole lot. So people have said I'm extremely obvious in my facial expressions. And usually it's very much like when I see things that are horrendous, I'm like, oh God, oh God, oh God. And I'm just like horrified and I can't watch it. And I'm looking down or I'm looking around, and it's hilarious. I'm sure it would be a comedy show if they had a camera on me when I'm watching dancers. Yes.
Okay, cool. Because I just like when I watch, like, I really wish there was a split screen and we were seeing what you were doing, because I just think it would be so awesome, because you're like the most entertaining judge, I think, there. So it's great. And then another question, when we see like some of the behind the scenes, like they show it really quickly, but when we see bits that you're actually choreographing, is it hard for you to, I guess, like admonish some of these dancers when they screw up, or are you just like, hey dudes, get it?
It depends on the dancer. You know, I sometimes like just kind of tap into like their whole essence and like, you know, how they're coming to the floor. You know, are they coming with cockiness? Are they coming with humbleness? Are they, you know, I try not to be, I think I've gotten softer in my old age. I think I've, I don't know. I appreciate hard work and I appreciate, you know, gratefulness and humbleness. And so when I see a dancer that might not be, you know, very good, but their spirit is so precious, I don't want to kill them. You know what I mean? I don't want to take them down in flames. So I just kind of, I give them the information. And sometimes it could be considered harsh, but it's honest. And I try to come from it with more of a nurturing kind of thing, opposed to you suck, get out of my face. Like, do you know what I mean? I'm not there, you know, anymore. I think if it was 10 years ago, you would have gotten a whole nother TV show side of me for sure. I was pretty brutal back in the day.
And Mia, what qualities do you actually look for when you are casting a project like a Madonna or a Cirque du Soleil? What are you looking for in a dancer?
Uniqueness. I think work ethic is everything. Uniqueness, having a really individual voice as an artist is really important because that inspires me as well. I hate to see like carbon copies of dancers that just are, they all look the same. And I'm not interested in that. So for me, that for sure.
And I wanted to ask you this because I mentioned it a little bit before when we were actually off audio here. I'm a huge fan of Janet Jackson. Know that you were actually supposed to dance with her at the MTV Music Awards in 2009. Yeah. I saw some footage of you in rehearsal with everyone. First of all, can you tell me what it was like that you didn't get to perform with them? And the fact, like, what was it actually like in rehearsal? Because you were there with, it was like a dream team of choreographers dancing with Janet. It was like bliss for any of us.
Yeah, it was very cool. And we're all like really close friends and family. So the fact that we were all doing it together was just awesome. For me, it was weird because I had never danced professionally, and I went right into being a choreographer pretty much. And so it would have been my first job as a dancer.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I bulged two discs in my back, and I was like, oh no. Like, I was so frustrated because I wanted to do it so much. It was going to be my first job, my first gig as a dancer, and my last gig as a dancer. Because after rehearsals, I was like, oh, hell no. Like, I am not ever, like, ever. Our bodies were wrecked. All of us, Gil, everybody, we were like, oh my God. Like, because we're directing and choreographing now. So we're not in that rehearsal process like that. And I was sitting on my couch when I was watching them do it. And I was so proud of everyone, and I felt like I was there, but it wasn't the same. You know, of course I was devastated that I couldn't do it, but I guess I wasn't supposed to.
Well, you're awesome anyway. It was great to see you in the rehearsal footage. And just a quick question, I guess, about you and Janet. Was that your first time meeting her? And was she having difficulty to sort of get through it because it was a first performance with her brother Michael not being there, like, in life with the rest of us?
I think she was, I think, very much mourning. And she was quiet. You know, in rehearsals, she was very quiet, more, introverted. But she was so wonderful to everybody. She was so giving and lovely and just awesome, you know. So, yeah, it was weird. It was a weird time, I mean, because it was just months, a couple months after. So, but it was an honor to be asked to even do that. And I think it was more about that for me, and for everyone. It was about, we were actually asked to be a part of a homage to Michael Jackson. Like, that's pretty massive.
I wish that you guys actually had put just like a DVD performance out, like, on just of that, like, you guys, because you're all amazing, like you and Brian and Gil and Tice and Tina. Like, it was like a dream team of choreographers dancing. Awesome. And just one final question for you. Now, are you going to continue with So You Think, and what's up next for you? I know that you are working with Blake McGrath, and he's told me that you're going to continue to be with him. That's what he tells me. I hope I'm not getting in trouble. That's what he said. He said that you've signed on to be with Blake.
Oh, I have? Okay.
Uh-oh, did I get him in trouble, Mia? Is he in trouble? He's going to hate me now. Uh-oh.
I've signed on. I haven't signed on yet.
Uh-oh, well, you have now, according to Blake.
But, you know, we're in talk right now for me to direct all his stuff and be a big creative part of his whole, like, his whole vibe, his whole essence of who he is as an artist.
Well, P.S., if this helps him, he told me how much he loves you and that you guys have, like, a vibe and an understanding. So if that will help you to sign on the dotted line, he'll be, if that helps you any.
I love him, too, very much.
Very, very much. Yeah. And I think, honestly, when I look at the work, he trusts me. And I think that for that's key for someone, you know, especially him stepping into his, like, whole new, that whole recording artist thing, that he trusts my vision and he allows me to guide him and he listens. And that's awesome, you know. And because I just think that, you know, being a pop star and being, you know, one of these you know, recording artists, it's so easy to get cheesy and corny. And I'm trying to push him into a really raw, really, like, really cool place, you know. And I think it's kind of cool. So we'll see. But yes, I love his talent. I love him. So we'll see where it goes.
Awesome. Mia, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
So welcome.
That's the amazing Emmy award-winning choreographer and judge from So You Think You Can Dance, Mia Michaels. And to learn all about her, check her out, www.miamichaels.com. It's Kelly, and thanks so much for hanging out on the Best of the Kelly Alexander Show this week as we take a look back at all the cool segments and interesting interviews that we've done since the show debuted back in October 2009. You've got to listen to this. My next guest is an amazing comedic talent, having opened for the likes of Leslie Nielsen and Jerry Seinfeld. She's performed on stage at Montreal's world-renowned Just for Laughs Festival, starred in her own comedy series and special, The Home Show and Homes Alone, and was also an integral part of CBC's The Royal Canadian Air Farce. And now she's an author of a new book called I Love Your Laugh. Jessica Holmes, welcome to The Kelly Alexander Show.
Thanks, Kelly. Kelly and I went to Ryerson.
Yes, we did. That's so awesome. And I want to ask you about actually something that you used to be a part of at Ryerson a little bit later. But first, I have to ask you, how did you actually get into comedy? Was this sort of there since childhood?
Absolutely not. Like, I was always weird and always a little funny to other people without understanding it. So I'd be like, why are they laughing? I'm hurt. But eventually, like even in high school, I was voted funniest girl in the yearbook, and I still was like, that is so odd. What are people talking about? And then it wasn't until university that a few friends and I dared each other to do stand-up. And for me, it was just a matter of, like, you know, having some ideas I'd been jotting down and wanting to express them. And I just got so hooked on the lifestyle. I still don't consider myself funny in the same way that a lot of stand-ups are funny, but somehow I keep thinking one day someone's going to realize it and fire me. But until then, I just keep expressing what my thoughts are and hoping that audiences have a good reaction to it.
And my next question, but
that is not a good self-endorsement, is it?
Well, it's good to be self-deprecating on occasion. And so I have to ask you, what was your first big break? Because you did mention university, and that I guess is my pre-question. Was it Riot? That was our sort of sketch comedy show at Ryerson that you were involved in.
Yeah, and I hadn't done sketch comedy or anything like it. In high school, I did improv, but when I got to university, I thought, I want to do something that's kind of cool outside of classes. So I auditioned for a musical, and I also auditioned for the sketch comedy troupe there. And I got accepted to both, and I called the director of the sketch comedy troupe, and I was like, I just don't know what to pick. And he said, you are funny. You are funny more than you are other things, so you have to take this route. And it's I wonder all the time. That was Matt Hornberg, by the way. Shout out to Matt. I have to wonder all the time, like, what would have happened if I had just gone with the musical? And, you know, would I be a dentist today? Or like, how would my life have changed and been different? But, yeah, I picked the comedy, and it's been such a roller coaster ride, like a wonderful roller coaster ride. It's really cool. I still cherish the moments when I'm on stage. I just did a fundraiser last weekend, and it feels great. Feels really, really great to do what I do for a living.
And you know what's actually funny as you were speaking, and I've actually been thinking about this leading up to our chat today. I think the first thing I remember about you was doing the sketch comedy at Ryerson when you did Penny from Inspector Gadget.
Oh my gosh, I'd forgotten about that.
You nailed that. Like, it was the creepiest thing, but the coolest thing, because you had her right down to like every little nuance going. And that's the first thing I think I remember about you from Ryerson was that one of your first characters that you created?
I guess so. You know what, that must have been the very first impression I ever did. I'd forgotten about that, but I think creepy comes a little naturally to me. Like, even when I do my celebrity impressions, what I'm looking for is the element in those people that's a bit creepy. Like, because Celine Dion has an incredible voice. She's a good person, a beautiful person, but the creepiness with her is her whole thing with Renee. And then my joke now with her is like, you know, I always wanted to have the kind of talent that makes other people feel very ashamed of their voice. And I pray for this. And then one day an angel farted, and out of that fart came my voice. So I'm always trying to like glom onto the only little creepy quality that a celebrity might have, and then I like blowing that up. It's just kind of what comes naturally to me, I guess. Naturally, I'm odd like that.
I think you're amazing. So oddly amazing. Maybe that's the word. And I'm glad you brought up the impersonations, because you like, I think a lot of people know you for Celine, also for Liza Minnelli. Was it really hard for you to master those impersonations? Because I was actually watching some YouTube clips this morning, and it's so awesome how you just have their nuances down.
Oh, thank you. You know what's hard for me now is that today singers are so homogenized, like it's kind of like they get put through this machine, so people are less and less interesting, so it's harder for me to find people to do impressions of. Like, when I was looking for Celine and for Liza, they seemed easy because they're so over the top, but now there's not tremendous over the top performers except for Lady Gaga, so I'm currently working on that impression because I feel like, oh gosh, I'd love to nail her, to nail that impression, sorry, not her. I do not want to nail Lady Gaga, for the record. I think she's awesome. It, at the time, doing Liza just came naturally. Like, it's really odd when I'm working on the writing process, because I sit down at the computer and I start to think, what would, like, if Liza Minnelli was talking about bubblegum, what would she say about it? And then all of a sudden I switch into this character and I'm kind of improvising as her as I'm typing what my thoughts are. And so definitely my husband, you know, locks the bedroom door when I'm doing that, because he's like, you're so weird. But it just happens naturally. I feel like I channel these people kind of thing, and I have a great time doing it. Hopefully nobody's feelings get hurt, but my gosh, it's like, I wouldn't do it if the audiences weren't asking for it, but they still are asking for it, except for the under 30 crowd who doesn't know who Liza Minnelli is.
Which is sad. That's just sad right there.
Yeah.
Joining us on the show right now is actress...
A black-haired drug addict.
Yeah, I know. Joining us on the show right now is actress, comedian, and author Jessica Holmes, her new book called I Love Your Laugh. Jessica, what was it like to actually land the gig to be like a regular member on Royal Canadian Air Force? Because to me, that just seems like upper echelon of Canadian comedy.
I grew up hearing my parents and my grandparents talk about the show all the time, and so to be invited on was a beautiful experience. And the best part of it for me is that Roger and Don, the two producers and stars of the show, they are just as nice in person as they are on the show. And so I went into this situation that could have been incredibly sort of intimidating and challenging, and instead I just felt like, oh my gosh, this sits like a glove. I just feel so at home right now, and they took me under their wings, and I feel like they mentored me in a couple of different ways as well, just helping me kind of bring out my best. And even they're just incredible examples, too, of how they treat the cast and crew. I've never seen that before from producers, to take so much time to make sure that anyone who's not feeling well is feeling better, or if an illness happened in somebody's family, like, they would go all out trying to help that person. And So I'd say it was a learning experience in comedy, but even more than that, just like how to be a decent person. They're really, really cool guys, those two.
And do you miss the show now that it's off air?
I miss the people, but my part of what I talk about in the book is how I had stopped taking chances in my career, and I think that's sort of universal. A lot of people go through that. In life, you set goals, and once you reach those goals, you kind of start getting a little lazy and not setting any new goals for yourself. And I had reached that point, and so I actually decided to leave Air Force before it ended so that I could challenge myself to go out and do things that scared me. And that was, for example, it was making a return to stand-up. It was trying to pitch new TV shows, and that was... It was so weird because people were like, what on earth are you doing? How can you walk away from that job? But you get to a point where you're saying, you know what, you only live once, and I've just got to take chances again. That's my personality. That's an actor's personality. And a comedian's, you want to see what else is out there.
And was taking a chance the reason you wrote the book?
Completely. I had I couldn't wrap my head around, I wanted to do a TV show. I really wanted to do a TV show, but every time I would try and write a TV show or write new stand-up, instead all that would come into my mind were like funny things that happened to me as a kid or as an adult. And so I sort of just bowed down to my inner muse and said, okay, fine, we'll write this book that, you know, my creative self just kept pushing on me. And writing the book turned out to be my favorite moment in my career so far, just in terms of creativity. Like, laughing as I was typing, and I started calling girlfriends and asking for their input about like what they found most challenging in life or what were big milestones for them. And then I wrote about those things in a comedic way, sort of, I guess, proving to myself that all of the difficult things that you go through in life, if you give them a bit of time, eventually you'll be laughing about them with your girlfriends. And so that's been a message that I was, I don't know, I guess really happy to get out there a bit. And someone like Kathy Griffin, I mean, she's totally my hero. And so I wanted to write a comedy book too, in terms of just expressing who I am and getting back to myself and what I find funny, not necessarily what other people have written for me. And so that was the biggest chance I've taken, because I still don't know what the reaction's going to be to it.
I think it's going to be awesome.
Oh, thank you. I've gotten one review so far, and it was a good one. So that made me feel terrific, because I, for goodness sakes, I talk about pubic hair on the first page. So I definitely was like, you know what, something very bad could come of this, or something very good. We'll see.
And actually, you know what's funny is actually reading the book, when, you know, because it was just, I love the way you have little anecdotes sort of, you know, in and out through the storytelling. And then when I was actually reading the book sort of through, it actually sounds, even though, you know, it's like a fun book, it also talks about the tough time that you went through. And I guess with kind of self-confidence issues after your television show ended, can you explain sort of what you went through when that happened and how you came out the other side? Because it just seems like you are a much stronger person.
Oh, absolutely. When I finished taping the first season of The Holmes Show, there was some kind of weird kerfuffle with my agent and the producers there, and all of a sudden the show was canceled. And it was canceled in a way that I sort of, I didn't know that there was any new show being worked on, but all of a sudden, like, my friends started acting a little bit secretive or strange or withdrawn from me, and then all of a sudden I heard about that there's this whole new sketch comedy show with all the people I had worked with before except for me. And so I felt like publicly really humiliated and felt that sort of my friends had betrayed me, and it was all just so public. It's a terrible feeling to go through what I can only describe as the TV equivalent of a firing, but then to go through it in front of the whole industry and have people watch you trying to recover and stuff. So that became a really low point for me, and I think I was pretty afraid to take chances again after that. And what I ended up learning at the end of all that was just that I had to find something that I cared about so much that no one would ever be able to take that away from me, or that even if someone took away the fact that it was on television, it would still belong to me. And so hopefully this makes some sense to you, but it sort of was about discovering my creativity and what I have to offer and attaching that to a higher purpose, which was just kind of, you know, we're each born with a light and you got to shine that light and give to the world whatever gifts have been bestowed on you. And so I just decided to give comedy my everything, despite the fact that I had been embarrassed or humiliated or whatever. And it was really freeing to do that. And it's hilarious because it's like, I'm not like that was for me. I've been on a really famous show, and now I'm sort of like working on this book and doing more piecemeal comedy here, there, and everywhere. But I'm just so happy. Like, I'm so happy to not be afraid of anything anymore. I'm not afraid of failure anymore, because I've felt what that feels like, and I realize, you know what, it's not so bad. It's not like, it's really not the end of the world to have something like that happen. It was totally unpleasant. I don't want to go through it again, but at least I realize it wasn't the end of me.
Joining us on the show right now is actress, comedian, and author Jessica Holmes. Check her out, www.jessicaholmes.com. Jessica, what do you want people to take away from this book? Because I took away a lot. Like, I took away, like, obviously the comedic elements, and then basically what you've just talked about, how things can get bad, but, you know, you'll come through it. But what do you want other people to take away from it?
Oh, my God. The thing that first and foremost I wanted people to do was laugh. Like, I feel like I answer to the comedy gods, and so I really tried hard to put my humor into it. But then I wanted to take areas that I know that have been hard for me and areas that are hard for my girlfriends and stuff, and things like the in-law chapter, where I sort of feel like I was able to take something that was for a while kind of detrimental to my marriage, and because I came out the other end, I thought, you know what, I want to write about this, and I want to write about it in a funny way that anybody who's going through weird relationship stuff, whether it's with their family or their in-laws or their friends or whatever, kind of can see how to look at it with a little bit of levity, instead of feeling like, oh, it's the end of the world, I'm trapped in this relationship or whatever. I guess, you know what, at the end of the day, I just want people to feel like, phew, it's not just me. Not just me. She's been embarrassed 10 times worse than I have, and she's okay, so I'm okay.
That's awesome. Well, I definitely get that vibe that you're sort of one of us.
Well, I love that you read it. I didn't know that you read it, so that's really cool. That makes me feel great. Thank you.
No problem. I was happy to read it. And actually, I kind of know this answer because I know you've answered in the book, but I kind of wanted to put it out there for the listeners right now. Do you have ambitions? Because to me, you are, you know, like I said, the upper echelon of Canadian comedy. Do you feel the need to head south, just like Jim Carrey and some other ones before him?
No, my husband and I had our green cards, and we went down to LA a couple of times, and honestly, like, you can't go to the car wash without hearing about the industry. The industry just never turns off in Los Angeles, and that's perfect for people who are incredibly ambitious and want to be immersed in their work, but I feel like I want to have a life, and then I also want to work, and so for us, we decided to stay in Canada, and we feel like we have terrific careers going here, and we just want to invest more in our country and stay close to home. I also get incredibly homesick, so it just feels like Canada's better for me.
Good for you. And then, so what is up next for you professionally? Because it seems you've got a lot of irons in the fire.
I have a reality series in development, and I can't talk about a whole lot right now, but definitely that's something that is like burning passion in me right now. And other than that, I just promised myself that I would follow whatever little whims I have creatively, and so I'm saying yes to things that normally I would say no to. So I'm playing an egg in an upcoming film, which is totally weird. But my agent, I tell myself I'm just saying yes to everything. So in the last couple of weeks, my agent called and was like, will you play an egg? And I was like, yes. And before that, it was like, will you work with a bear on stage? And I said, yes, I will work with a bear, no questions asked. So I've gotten myself into like totally weird adventures, but I feel like that's the fun part of life, is saying yes without knowing how it's going to end.
This will be great fodder for your next book.
Yay!
Do you plan on writing another book, Jess?
I definitely do, because even since this one has been published, the embarrassing situations continue to happen, and I sort of feel like embarrassments are painful until you share them. And so yes, I went to a meeting last week and I had these really gorgeous red shoes on, and I drove barefoot in the car to this meeting, and then I just threw my shoes on and started to walk to the meeting, and with every step my shoes were falling off. So eventually I just had to take my shoes off and go into this important meeting with TV executives in bare feet. So I just feel like, you know what, I need to share that. I need to put that down on paper, and then I won't feel so awful.
That's awesome. Jessica, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, Kelly.
That's actress, comedian, and author Jessica Holmes. Again, make sure to pick up her new book, I Love Your Laugh, from McClelland and Stewart. It's going to be available at Chapters Indigo, all that good stuff. And again, for more information, jessicaholmes.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
And here's a taste of the amazing comedic stylings of Jessica Holmes as the one and only Celine Dion, right here on the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you so much. As Farrah mentioned, I'm Jessica Holmes. You can call me J-Ho. Thank you. I'm sorry to disappoint you, that's all. Oh my gosh, I'm so thrilled to be here today. I did just come down from upstairs. I'm about the happiest person in the world to be working on Royal Canadian Air Force, doing all kinds of different characters and doing different accents, which I love so much. I mean, my ancestors are Scottish and Irish, and that's a nice mix.
If our babies are lucky, they'll get your overbite and my drinking problem.
That being said, my favorite accent of all is the one I will do for you now.
Allô, 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 c'est moi, Céline!
Oh, my little Pitou. I know it's a pleasure for you to meet me. Oh, yes, but the honor is all yours. Hey, and I know you are looking at me and saying, what up, lemon head? Oh, but my little Pitou, I want to tell you, I went to see my stylist, and I said, I want to have hair like a parakeet and a body like Bob Saget. Oh, they make my dreams come true. And you know, I work out so much. I have gone down to Cirque du Soleil, huh? And they teach me a new magic disappearing trick. Huh? Huh? Now you seize me? Now you do not! Hop, stop. Oh, it's true. I am the first maman to weigh less than her bébé. Oh, I used to use the diet pills diet, but now I find it's easier to just lay down in a vice grip and then turn and turn and turn until I'm skinny like spaghetti with big head. Oh, but bon, I want to let you know I'm having the time of my life, you know. As you know, I have a new little bundle of bébé. Oh, and yes, we used to have family traditions, and I want to continue family traditions with my new little baby boy, you know, like playing tag or selling Chryslers. Oh, yes, we have such a good time. And also, always with my new little bundle of baby, I like to sing to him lullabies. Every night I sing for him lullabies, like this lullabies. The wheels on the bus go round and round, round and round we learn. I am Celine.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
My next guest is an international superstar. Oprah Winfrey calls her the master of paint and plaster. Regis Philbin calls her the reigning queen of renovations. She's all this, plus a whole bunch more, including being a television star, best-selling author, and columnist. Debbie Travis, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, nice to be here.
Debbie, I guess, you know, watching you do your thing on television, it seems when it comes to home decor and painting that it looks so effortless for you. Should it be sort of effortless for all of us? Because I think for some of us, it just seems like we're never going to get it.
No, I think, you know, it depends on the type of show. I mean, the prime reason for doing a television show around whatever subject is to entertain people, whether it's, you know, cooking or selling property or renovating a room. I mean, the day of the how-to show, where it was slow and people watched it and followed along, is kind of long gone. So, you know, the shows we do today are pretty fast-paced, and I think I've created so many enemies over the years by saying, oh, it's so easy, you can do it in an hour. You know what, there's a lot of rules you should do when you're doing it at home, and, you know, obviously budget is a very important part, and I think taking your time is actually, you know, the most important thing is pace yourself out and enjoy the process. Don't see, you know, interior design as a chore. You know, if you're doing up your living room or your bedroom, see it as, you know, something fun, and you're going to create something that you've done, and enjoy the process. So, you know, the way we do it on television is drama, 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 and, you know, you put home decorating together with people, and you always get drama. It's like learning to drive with your husband. You just don't do it.
And Debbie, I'm glad you mentioned the economical side of things, because I think a lot of people are on tight budgets these days, especially just coming out of the recession. Are there a few things that you would suggest for people who just need to sort of give their place a little bit of flair and maybe a bit of sprucing up that won't cost them a mint?
Well, obviously, paint. Paint is one of the easiest ways to do up a space. It's the least expensive, and you can have an immediate, you know, reaction and change of mood with a change of color. And I think people completely still, you know, after me, you know, flogging this message for so many years, still do not understand the power of a color and the power of how it makes us feel. I mean, you know, why when we go out on a beautiful fall day, do we go, oh my God, you know, you've got blue sky, you've got red trees, we feel good. You know, we feel good when the spring comes out, we feel miserable when it rains, you know. So, you know, you put a beautiful color on your walls. You know, beige, I think, should be banned. I think it should be taken off the shelf, and anybody who puts up beige walls, I think, should be shot, because it's boring, and beige has a lot of black in it. There is nothing sophisticated about it, there's nothing cool about it. It, beige absorbs light. It takes it out, you know, and there's no reflection. There's nothing. So, you know, everybody I've ever preached this message to, you know, who said, oh, go on, I'll try it. I've never had anybody ever turn around and say, you know what, that was the biggest mistake I ever made, you know, because color is a mood enhancer.
That's amazing. I think a lot of people need to take that to heart. And Debbie, you know, I wanted to talk to you about your latest television series. It just seems to be so inspiring. It's called All for One, again, with Debbie Travis, airing on CBC on Sunday nights at 9. It seems, you know, different from your other television projects, even though it does sort of involve renovations.
Yeah, All for One is a huge primetime show. It's really about three things. It's about a hero, somebody who's not your typical hero, but they're more the glue of a community, the people who really make the neighborhood that we live in a better place to live. And then the communities themselves, we really get an inkling into some really incredible, very unusual communities in this country that I think a lot of people just don't even know are around. And then the nightmare for me is it's a major renovation for this hero who goes away. But I'm alone, and I have to do this with volunteers, which has aged me over the last 6 months. It's the good, the bad, and the ugly of the volunteer. And it's extremely funny, the show, because, you know, you can only scream at people so much when they're giving up a week from work to come and rip out somebody's ceiling, you know. So my job is to get the community to come together and do this for this one person. Of course, you know, the first day, you know, we're mobbed by people. It's fantastic. And then, of course, Monday morning comes and it's like, oh, sorry, I've got to go to work, or I've got to pick up the kids, and all the excuses that you can imagine. Walk the dog Monday, sorry, because they get really fed up of me after a day. But it's about commitment. It's about how far will you go for that person. And it's the results are quite funny. And you know, if the job's not done, the job's not done. And you know, it's I think they've watched so many decorating shows that they really think that at 6 o'clock, you know, or 8 o'clock at night when the cameras go down, that we'll just come in and finish it off. And our first show was in Cabrini Street in Montreal, was the Italian community, and they were like, oh, they'll come in and finish it. Oh, no, we won't. Wow. You're doing it. You're stepping up to the plate, you know. So it's kind of funny, you know, and they're learning as we go along. But It's anybody who's ever done volunteer work. You always get the same. You get the eager beaver who's there at 6 in the morning and leaves at 5 in the morning, who's there doing everything and can barely stand up. They're so tired. Then you get the person who stands around talking all the time and actually does nothing. You know, so it's just human beings who I find very funny. I said, I think I'm another breed because I'm quite normal. It's just everybody else out there who's really odd.
And I have to ask you, because you mentioned that it was a bit of a trying situation, you know, the last 6 months. Has this been the most difficult television project that you've put together because you've had to rely so much on this volunteer help?
Absolutely, because it's real. And, you know, I mean, it's real reality. It's funny to see their faces when you say, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to design this. I'm going to knock down these walls. And they're all like, oh, my God. They're all screaming. And then I turn around and say, but I'm not doing it. You're doing it. It's like that. It's actually priceless to see their faces. But it was hard. We were a very big team crossing the country. There were 65 of us in hotels and motels. And you know, the communities are amazing. You know, I mean, they really did come together. But it's like being a fly on the wall and seeing exactly what goes on. But also learning a little bit about some of these communities and what makes them tick and where their problems are. It's really like going into somebody's home. It's that nosy voyeurism of a fly in the wall, you know. And to push people really to the limit, you know, because these are big renovations. I mean, we're virtually rebuilding a house in 5 days. There's new windows going in, new floors going in, new kitchens. You know, it's big and it's, you know, it's hard work for everybody. And they do get very, very tired.
And Debbie, what do you want as us, the audience, to take away from watching the show? Because it does seem like, you know, I've watched some of the clips and some of the shows. And as a viewer, it seems like it's just much more than a show. It seems like it's really showing a sense of community. Is that what you want us as the audience to take away from it?
I think there is a message in it. I mean, I want people to have a great hour and really be entertained and laugh and get ideas and you know, and sometimes be horrified. But at the same time, I do believe that community is very important, and especially in the urban areas where community is disappearing. And, you know, the ethnic communities are still very strong. The rural communities are very strong because they have to be. That's their support group. But the places that it's disappearing is, you know, the bigger urban towns. And they people are too busy. They just don't have time. And you can't muddle up a neighborhood with a community. A neighborhood is a group of houses. A community is when people really care about each other and come together. And when you look at these heroes, they're usually very humble, they're very quiet people, they're just leaving legacies for our children, the next generation. They're really doing something for other people without being asked, without being paid, you know. And you know, the sad thing is we don't usually realize how amazing these people are until we go to their funeral. And you're like, oh, my God, I didn't know they did all that and that and that. And we're like, wow, that person's really special. So we're trying to say these aren't people who've come back from Iraq. These aren't people who maybe have, you know, saved somebody from drowning. Those are different types of heroes. These are the unsung heroes, literally the glue that makes the street we live in, the neighborhood we live in, a better place. And they're a dying breed, I have to tell you.
And Debbie, actually, as you're talking, you know, it sounds obviously that you're very passionate about this. And I just wanted to know, what did you take away from this process? Because as you've been talking, it seems like it was almost like a big learning experience for you.
Yeah, you know what, because I'm a big believer, and I have on my street, I have 8 mothers, and that's our community. We support each other. We're there for each other. We cry on each other's shoulders. We help each other with our kids, you know, and that's my community. And I feel sorry for people who don't have it because it's your backup system, especially today when people don't have their mum on the street. You know, they don't have what they had 40 years ago. And we must make time for that, you know, especially women, because women are slightly overloaded today because we're working, we've got families. And the one thing that seems to be you know, taken off our to-do list is our often our time with our friends and our community, our street, our group, you know, and we relied on that in the old days. And it was Obama's message of unless we stick together, we will not make it. And it's very, very important. So, you know, I got to see some big communities, small communities. I saw the, you know, the good and the bad and mostly good, really mostly good. And what the, how these people come together. You know, it's not only a renovation project. Remember, when all these, when hundreds of people come together, they have to be fed. So we had, you know, somebody in charge of food. So they have to put a team together to feed all these people. And I'll supply the tools and the materials and the money, and they have to supply the labor. So, you know, first it's great. They all start cooking 3 meals a day. And then by the third day, you know, you're still in that kitchen chopping up carrots and stuff. You know, people make either, it becomes tense, but they make great friends and great relationships. And we left little legacies in each place. It's the best way to describe this show is modern day barn raising. It's people coming together for the good of one other person. But what do you get out of it by the end? You know, you feel fantastic. You've done something together. And togetherness is something we're becoming very insular today in our little pods, you know. Togetherness is where we need to be aiming for. And you know, we see the tragedies in the world. You know, we see Haiti and we feel helpless. We can't do anything. But what you do have is time and a skill. Everybody has some skill. And I think people need to pool their skills and say, you know what? Mrs. Jones is a single mother up the street. Why don't we, you know, one weekend this year, all come together and we'll rip out her old basement and rebuild it for her, you know, and that's what's happening in all the places we're going. People are saying, we can do this. We can do it more often. I can bake cookies. I'm an electrician. I can lay floors. I can paint a wall. Everybody can do something. So that's really what we're trying to get across.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show today is amazing home decor expert, television personality, best-selling author, and columnist, Debbie Travis. And again, check her out, www.debbietravis.com. Debbie, something I've always wanted to ask you, because you have, you know, your hand in so many different facets with regards to your home design, you know, company and all that sort of stuff with the television show. Do you actually, what's the most, I guess, important thing for you or the most enjoyable nowadays? Is it being on television, writing your books and columns, or actually still getting your hands dirty?
Well, I think what a lot of people don't know is I produce many shows, not just mine. You know, we're doing Chuck's Day Off, which is a great show on the Food Network. We produce Property Shop, many shows, the lifestyle programming that's done in this country for here and in America and around the world. And I love producing, but at the moment I'm doing a lot of public speaking, and I really enjoy talking to women. I really enjoy young entrepreneurs and old entrepreneurs, people, you know, going into the workforce, people rejoining the workforce after they've had their children, and the challenges that each age group has, you know, juggling family. I wrote a book called Not Guilty about my journey as a mother and working. And I like talking, like I said, a lot of public speaking. I like talking to people about, you know, how to make it, because it ain't that. I always feel if I can do it, anybody can do it. I'm not terribly bright, but you know, there it's actually not that difficult. There are always challenges. It's about energy. It's about, you know, just really believing in what you do, and you will do it in the end. Everybody I know who's made it, you know, it's not that you've got drive. It's not that you're particularly clever. You can hire clever people. It's just that you believe in something. And I believed 15 years ago that everybody who grabbed a sponge and a stencil could make their homes bigger. I was probably, you know, wrong, but, you know, you could make your home prettier. And people loved it. And they went, oh, my God, I can do that. And people's enthusiasm grew my enthusiasm. And I just, you know, I was just one bounce ahead of everybody else. And I think whatever you're doing in life, you know, you can make it. You can make, you just need that energy and that enthusiasm.
And I guess I have to ask you then, what's next for you? Because you've accomplished so much and you continue to inspire so many people. You've changed people's lives, especially with this show on CBC right now. So what direction is calling you? I know you said speaking to women, is that going to continue and even get more so, Debbie, or?
Yeah, well, I do a lot. Like I said, I get asked to do a lot of public speaking, but I've also started something in Italy. I started retreats there. So I take groups of women, about 14 women at once from across the country and a few Americans. I even have somebody from Barbados. And we did a few last year, and I have a villa there, and we go out, and it's the most amazing week. It's girls' night out for a complete week. I try and not take groups of friends. I want people to meet other people. No men, and we have chefs, and we have yoga, and we have public speaking, and we have some movie stars who come and talk, who live in the area, and it's just one laugh and cry after another. I mean, a lot of tears, but a lot of really, really good time. And these women, it's a life-changing week. We just spend the week talking, which women do incredibly well, and brainstorming. And everybody's got a story. And I've had several people go into business together. I've had all kinds of wonderful stories come out of it. And I really want to grow that. I'd like to be able to, it's just hard fitting it in, but I'd like to do more a year. But I'll probably do another one maybe next June. And it's like, I think the key is that, you know, these women come from all age groups, all backgrounds. And the idea is the minute they get off that plane, you don't have to think. And for women, you're constantly nurturing and bossing and telling other people what to do. And it's such an amazing relief to say, right, I'm going to feed you, clothe you, bath you, you know, exercise you, you know, entertain you. We're going to do everything for you. And they're like puppies lying on their backs. They're like, I mean, they weep when they arrive. They go, because the place is beautiful. It's an ancient villa with a 14th century courtyard and fabulous food and lots of wine. And they leave. They leave like little girls. It's like going to camp. It's amazing to watch. And it's very special to me. I really, really love doing it. So that's kind of something I'd like to have the time to do more of. And just try and inspire them, and they inspire me and each other. And we have everything from CEOs to people who are just, you know, working in a store, or just, you know, somebody who's a stay-at-home mom. It doesn't matter. Everybody's got dreams. Everybody's got worries, you know, and we just discuss everything. Night and day.
I don't know when you find time to go to bed.
I'm like 4 o'clock in the morning. Like, you need to stop running around like children and go to bed, because it's yoga at 8 o'clock. it's amazing to watch grown women.
Wow, I don't even know when you find time to sleep. It seems like you're super busy.
Well, that the Italian project is really—it's just—it's pure fun. I mean, it's a lot of organizing, but it's such a gift to me to be able to do this.
That's,
you
know,
so if anybody's interested, you know, they can tweet me, or they can go on my website on debbietravis.com, and it says Italian Getaway, and they can check it out and just, you know, get some information.
That's amazing. Debbie, thank you so much for spending time with us today. I really appreciate it.
Okay, cheers. Thank you.
That's home decor expert, television personality, best-selling author, and columnist Debbie Travis. Again, check her out, www.debbietravis.com. And again, her new show, All for One with Debbie Travis, airs Sunday nights at 9 p.m. on CBC.
Bring on the remix.
Another show has come to a close, and thank you so much for joining us as we took a look back at some of our favorite interviews and segments from the past year. And listening to the show, it's unbelievable how quickly time flies. A big thank you, by the way, going out to Esteban Vargas for putting this all together. And please make sure to join us next week as we return to brand new programming. And by the way, if you have any comments or questions or suggestions for possible guests or topics, please drop me a line, kelly@kellyalexandershow.com. Have a great week. You and I will chat soon.
The Kelly Alexander Show is hosted by Kelly Alexander. Produced by Esteban Vargas, Barbara Purcell, Chris Paré, and Kelly Alexander. Original themes and production music composed by Ian Campbell. Thanks for listening.